This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman.
Alethea, today we're talking weed. And honestly, I'm so happy we're doing this episode together because I have a vivid memory of sitting next to you during one of the many, many marijuana-related meetings that we went to, I don't know, it was like more than 7 years ago. And a lot has really changed in Michigan in the years since.
We spent hours.
So many hours.
So many hours. And so much has changed since then, and it has been a journey. So just quickly, Michigan went from a citizens-initiated medical market to a more state-regulated but still only medical market, and now has a recreational market that is also heavily regulated and was passed via ballot proposal. And the cannabis industry in Michigan is booming. For the first half of 2024, there were $1.6 billion in sales of recreational marijuana alone. And during the last fiscal year, local governments in Michigan split roughly $87 million in revenue from taxes on cannabis sales. And there's also tax revenue that goes toward schools and roads.
Now, earlier this year, the federal government started the process of rescheduling marijuana. What that means is essentially marijuana might be legal in Michigan and many other states, but it's still illegal federally. But Schedule I drugs are considered the most highly dangerous and addictive drugs that don't have a medical use, while Schedule III drugs are drugs that can be lawfully prescribed as medication. And changing its classification is something that advocates have been calling for years.
You know, there are challenges to those operating businesses in Michigan and other states with legal markets because of how the federal government schedules marijuana. For example, having very limited access to traditional banking. We asked Michigan Cannabis Regulatory Agency Executive Director Brian Hanna about what kinds of benefits the state market could see if the drug is rescheduled.
You hear terms like market corrections and market correcting itself when it comes to free market. There are businesses that succeed and there are businesses that do not succeed. In a regular business environment outside the marijuana industry, those that do not succeed have the opportunity to file for bankruptcy. Marijuana businesses do not have that opportunity because of its Schedule I status at the federal level.
It's important to note a public comment period on the change just ended, so the federal government will still be considering this rule potentially for a while. So there's quite a bit at stake here.
And there will still be a disconnect on how the federal government treats cannabis and how states treat it. Michigan and the 23 other states that have legal recreational marijuana will still be very different from the federal government where it remains illegal, even with rescheduling. But many advocates see the reclassification to a less serious drug with potential medical uses as a symbolic move by the federal government, which has long put marijuana in the same class of drugs as heroin and meth.
We're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk with Director Brian Hanna. Stick around. Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasman. We're joined now by Cannabis Regulatory Agency Executive Director Brian Hanna. Brian, thanks so much for joining us today on Mishmash.
Oh, thanks for having me. Excited to be here. Excited to talk about cannabis.
So, you know, let's start from the beginning. What does Michigan's regulated cannabis market look like? Who can buy and who can sell?
Sure. So we are a state that started out with a patient and caregiver program in 2008. And then we morphed into a medical marijuana facilities licensing act type market in 2016. We had our first sales of medical marijuana product in 2018 in the state of Michigan. And then quickly, as we're as an agency learning to figure out how to regulate the medical market, we had an adult use market come online with the passing of the MRTMA in 2018. And we had our first sales of adult use cannabis marijuana in the state of Michigan in 2019. So we manage those medical and adult use markets. We still manage the patient caregiver program. And we also have portions of the Industrial Hemp Research and Development Act. So we have portions of the hemp processor handling license, and we share some of those responsibilities with MDART as well. So we are quickly growing and advancing as an agency. We have a very large market when it comes to marijuana sales. Most of the sales, when it comes to the attributes of $3.2 billion in sales last year, on the adult use side. And then again, adult use sales, 21 and over, medical sales, patient caregiver card. And so we have a very active marijuana industry and cannabis community in the state of Michigan. And we're also members of the Cannabis Regulators Association. So we're very active in the regulator space, and we continue to work with our partner regulatory state agencies across the United States. A lot going on, a lot of changes, and a lot of things happening in this environment.
And Michigan's recreational market is quite large, right? Can you tell us how it compares to other states?
It is large, and it is newer in relevance to the size that it is compared to our partner states. Great question. You know, it really depends on the way in which you look at it. Per capita, we're number one as far as sales volume in the United States, in the state of Michigan, is in the sales numbers. As far as sales numbers one-dimensionally, we're second place to California. But Michigan is a large marijuana market. It's attributed to many different things. We have an expansive free market system in the state of Michigan when it comes to licenses. We have about over 800 retailers in the state of Michigan. It continues to expand as municipalities continue to opt into adult use recreational sales. And at the same time, you know, we are aware that we are also surrounded by states that don't have our program. So there are cannabis tourism opportunities where people do travel to Michigan for the aspect of acquiring marijuana in the state of Michigan where they can't get it elsewhere. And it does open up tourism for that aspect. So Michigan sales continue to be on a steady climb. We approximately break sales records about every quarter. And we just haven't seen the cap yet. Heard predictions of where the cap could be. But we haven't reached that cap as far as we've seen so far.
So, you know, marijuana has been legal for those over 21 for several years now, as you said. You know, is the state still dealing with an illegal market for the drug? And how does your agency work to fight that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we are. Any state that has a regulatory program, you know, there are still aspects of a criminal market type counter market that does go parallel to the regulated one. In the state of Michigan, I've seen statistics in which 75% of marijuana users use the regulated market, which is great. And it's, you know, it's dictated by many different things, how the criminal market operates. So in our space for the CRA, we have regulatory responsibility over applications and licensees. We do not have regulated responsibilities over the criminal market. And so anytime we get a tip or any kind of information that lead us to believe that is a criminal market activity, we work with our law enforcement partners at Michigan State Police, specifically the Marijuana Tobacco Investigation Section. They deserve a shout out for all the work that they do in helping us out. But we share information with law enforcement when it's pure on the criminal market side. And then there are aspects in the regulated environment where criminal market activity does get into the regulated side, and that's where we do have jurisdiction. And so part of those are where we're looking for operators that want to cut corners, bring in outside materials into the regulated market, save money on acquisitions, but it is also a health and safety concern for us. Anytime somebody maybe trying to subvert the testing requirements, which is the reason why we have a regulated environment. We're going to make sure that product is as safe as possible and tested. People are bringing in criminal market things. That has been an enforcement priority for our agency and continues to be so. So it's a multi-tiered aspect when you're talking about criminal market, and then also working with our regulated partners across the United States on tactics, techniques, and procedures on how to counter those activities.
And kind of sticking with the criminal aspect of all of this, I want to shift gears a tiny bit and talk about the federal government. Mm-hmm. The federal government is currently considering rescheduling cannabis from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 3 drug. Can you explain to listeners what that means?
Sure. And so there are so many different implications of what could happen from that rescheduling process from 1 to 3. And so recently, just a few weeks ago, we responded on July 22nd. To the open comment period to the DEA. And we felt it was important to provide a comment from a regulator perspective. You know, we have a very unique perspective, being one of the few regulators of something that's brand new in this country's history of regulating cannabis at this level. And so we have a very unique perspective of what could be the implications of rescheduling. And that's why we took the approach when we did our public comment of asking for guidance. And the reason we did that is there's so many different categories. You can look at a response, shameless plug, michigan.gov/CRA to go to our website. You can find our response to the DEA. It's approximately about 9 pages. And what the crux of it is we understand that the federal government is looking to possibly reschedule from 1 to 3. Some of the questions we have are as follows. Putting marijuana into the Schedule 3 category puts it into the same category as codeine, Vicodin, right? And so there is no adult use codeine or Vicodin program in the United States. So therefore, our adult use environment would appear to be non-compliant with the Schedule 3 rescheduling. And we understand with the proposed rulemaking that the proposed rescheduling is based off of the medical proposed benefits of marijuana. The same goes with the medical program that we have, along with the other regulated partners across the United States. Our medical program is not currently FDA compliant, which is often a requirement for any kind of substance in the Schedule 3 category. So the reason why we're asking for guidance is, you know, is the federal government, they plan on doing this, what is their enforcement stance going to be? Are they going to require the regulated programs that are currently regulated by the states to be FDA compliant on their medical programs? But there's so many different aspects that one can spend hours, if not days, to go into the minutia of what could possibly happen with rescheduling. And I'll break it down to a couple of those. I hinted on enforcement, of course, right? And so the state programs have been operating under the auspices of the Cole memo at the federal level from the DOJ perspective, and then more of a stance of DOJ kind of hands off on the regulated environments. And a Cole memo or that kind of clarification for the government would be fantastic if there's rescheduling of what the enforcement stance of DOJ is, but we're asking for a whole federal government approach, and here's why. There are certain states that have regulated programs that have different federal actions done by other federal agencies, Homeland Security, Department of Defense, FAA. What are those agencies' responses going to be when it comes to when marijuana is moved to Schedule 3? What is their stance going to be? Also, we're asking for financial guidance. You know, right now, the marijuana businesses cannot file for bankruptcy because of the Schedule 1 status of the federal government. But also tax exemptions, the 280E. I've seen a lot of commentary of people believing that 280E will automatically not be a notion that marijuana businesses can now file for federal tax exemptions. From our position, we want to see that guidance to make that clear if that is a case. You know, especially on the adult use side, which would not be Schedule 3 compliant, but also the medical side. What would the IRS's stance be? The bottom line is moving from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 does not decriminalize marijuana in the United States. What it does is it put it in a different category in which we need further guidance from the federal government of what the response would be and how that would affect the regulated environment across the United States, but marijuana in general.
So sort of putting a finer point on, you know, those comments, what challenges do businesses face in the current situation where there's this disconnect between how the federal government and states like Michigan treat marijuana, and would rescheduling help with some of those?
Right. So the current environment is a tricky one because of the incongruity between the state and the federal levels. You know, obviously marijuana is legal in the regulated environment in the state of Michigan with state law. In the federal side, there are implications because of its current status is Schedule 1, and I'll go through those. For example, a typical business, a regular business that operates outside of the marijuana industry, their tax rate for local, state, and federal typically anywhere between 18 and 22%. On the marijuana business side, you're talking about 60 to 70% because they cannot file for tax exemptions at the federal level. The concept of 280E from the IRS that if you are operating under a Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 substance, then you cannot file for a federal tax exemption. So that's a big challenge for our businesses. The other challenges are, and you hear terms like market corrections and market correcting itself when it comes to free market. there are businesses that succeed and there are businesses that do not succeed. In a regular business environment outside the marijuana industry, those that do not succeed have the opportunity to file for bankruptcy. Marijuana businesses do not have that opportunity because of its Schedule I status at the federal level. Significant other challenges that come along with this as well, because of the tax rate, because of the incongruity at the federal level, there are other implications that we've learned that continue to happen. For example, let's say you're a business owner in the marijuana environment and you use a bank that is willing to work with you. And there are not many. There are approximately five or six, and they change sometimes, between banks or credit unions that are willing to work with the marijuana industry. And let's say an owner works with one of those banks, but they have personal accounts with other banks. Those other banks can find out that that person is an owner or even works in the marijuana industry and can freeze their accounts and not let them bank at those banks anymore. We've heard instances of even workers having that happen to them. We've had instances of cannabis or marijuana workers in the state of Michigan not being able to get car loans, loans for homes. All these different things really impact people that are in the marijuana industry. What we hope, when we talk about rescheduling, is that there's some form of guidance from the federal government on all those things I just talked about, of what could possibly change with rescheduling. But as of right now, we just don't have those answers. And that's why we're asking for guidance.
Would anything change for consumers if the federal government rescheduled cannabis?
It could. It could. And that's part of the one of the guidance requests that we were asking for, too, especially when it comes to testing labeling requirements, interstate transportation of, let's say, something that is made in Missouri, and can it go to Michigan and vice versa? And what are those labeling and testing requirements going to be? Is there going to be a standardization? And that's what we're asking for the federal government for further guidance on, because right now in the current environment is in a regulated environment, your marijuana needs to stay in that state. And so each state is doing the best that they can to come up with their own requirements when it comes to testing, labeling, nutrition labeling requirements, all these different things that we need to be on having on the package in the state of Michigan may be different in other states. Even the universal symbol that shows you that this is a marijuana product, those marijuana universal symbols differ between states. And so for the consumer, there could be an impact with rescheduling if there's guidance from the federal government, from any kind of body within the federal government, maybe the FDA, who knows, of what those standardization requirements could be. And then it would make it easier for the consumer to identify a certain product because you have standardization across the United States. Good news is we are part of the Cannabis Regulators Association and definitely proud to be a board member of that association. So we have the ability to talk to other states and figure out what their best practices are. But we, at the end of the day, each state has their own discretion in accordance with their own laws, which are different, by the way, and rules, which have variances, to try to come up with best practices to try to make them uniform in certain ways. But as of right now, that uniformity is a system of patchwork. And so I think consumers could benefit from federal uniformity if the federal government was able to take that approach.
So looking at the federal government, but separate, you know, from rescheduling, is there anything you want to see from Congress? You know, what about legalization on the federal government front?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, you know, I have the unique perspective of representing the agency, and the CRA has the unique perspective of looking for things from a regulator perspective. And so we're going to keep pushing from that point of view of things that we just need guidance on what the federal government could do with any rescheduling efforts or any future talks at the federal level. I do know that our stance, along with the state of Michigan's stance, is there needs to be safe banking for marijuana businesses to be able to use banks without banks being a concern that the federal government would swoop in and seize the assets because it would be a control level one substance, or maybe even a Schedule III substance moving forward. But at the end of the day, I do know that access to capital is a major issue and concern to our marijuana businesses, especially our social equity businesses. And our small businesses, when it comes to access to capital, that is a big concern. I'll give you an example. To open up a retailer in the state of Michigan right now, you're looking at startup costs anywhere between $1.1 to $1.5 million. And the majority of those costs are due to the surveillance requirements that we need to protect public health and safety and the employees that work in those businesses. But that's a steep startup cost. And so access to capital is a big deal. And we know that access to capital and safe banking is something that we would like to see at the state. And then again, any further guidance the federal government can provide on what rescheduling could possibly be would definitely be beneficial, not just to the citizens of the United States, citizens of Michigan, but also the regulators that try to enact these programs to protect health and safety, but also support businesses' growth at the same time.
Switching gears a little bit, in last year's budget, the CRA received funding for a state lab. Where do things stand with construction? And can you talk about what a state lab would do and why we need one?
Absolutely. Great question. And I'm excited to talk about the lab. We are on schedule. We are looking forward to breaking down some walls and start doing the building process in the next 30 days. So September, we're looking forward to start smashing things and start building. And we're excited. And our goal, and it's still on schedule, is to get this lab construction and get the equipment in place before 2025. And excited to be on schedule. And the reason why we're on schedule, honestly, is the great work of our staff and the cooperation between the landlord and builders and all those that are supplying the equipment that we're purchasing. But we actually started the planning before we even had the funding attributed because we felt so strongly that if this were to work, we want to move as quickly as we possibly could. Why? Well, we want to do three major things with it. For example, when we talked about criminal market activity and how it could get into the regulated environment, we need this reference lab to help us with investigations to determine if material is illicit coming from outside of the regulated environment, looking at the cannabinoid profile, looking at adulterants, those kind of things. Right now, in the current environment, I'll just be honest, when we're looking for illicit product in the regulated environment, you're looking at about 45 days minimum, just to do that investigation. And we also wanted to relieve the burden from licensed laboratories that have been helping us out with our investigations, but then who's going to pay for that? So we want the reference laboratory to pick up that investigative capability and relieve the burden of having licensees to help us with our investigations on other licensees. So that's one of the things. The other one we want to do is we want to take product off the shelves, audit them, make sure that our policies are in line with what we want them to be, update our policies when it comes to science, but also keep our labs honest. You know, take a look at what the lab's testing procedures are and try to duplicate those in the name of science in our reference laboratory and use the reference laboratory to audit the labs. And then the third thing is like, I view it as the golden standard. We're not going to do this right away. This is what we want to work towards, which is standardized testing methods for all the different panels that are used to test marijuana. And work with the industry on those. We're not going to come out right out the way and say, labs, you shall use this method. We want to work with the industry, work with our partners at Canra, work with our partners at Canra that also have reference laboratories to determine what those testing methodologies should be, those standards. And then not only use those at some point, but also at some point, maybe inform the federal government what those testing standards should be, should there be any changes at the federal level. So, we're excited to be building this and have this. We are very fortunate. Really, if you regulate cannabis in the United States, you are in two buckets. You either have a reference laboratory or you want one. And so we're very fortunate to be the one that's getting one constructed very soon.
So we're rounding out the legislative term here in Michigan. Do you have any asks in front of the legislature that you want to see done by the end of the year?
Well, we know there are things that are going on. We know one of the big things that are happening in Michigan when it comes to on a legislative piece is the combination of the acts between the Medical Facilities Licensing Act and the MRTMA. And we think that's important, you know, especially just from a regulator perspective. It would make our jobs a lot easier and make our lives a lot easier. Right now, currently, our staff have to, with one rule set, have different flavors between the two different acts of what is allowed and what's not allowed between essentially businesses that are doing the same thing. It's the same plant. It's the same material. You've got a business that can be adult use and medical at the same time in the same space. And so there are intricacies that are different that our staff have to be aware of to deal with. And it would definitely make our regulator jobs a lot easier to have just one act and one rule set that speaks to one act. And I'll give you an example. The plant count, the authorized plant count on the medical side is different than the adult use side. Not only that, but when a plant is determined to be mature and count against your plant count is different on the adult use side to the medical side. And we know that those differences, those intricacies are burdens for the industry as well. So I think streamlining those is incredibly important. Something that I applaud lawmakers on having a bipartisan effort to move that forward. And we're excited to see where that goes. But we know from a regulated perspective that'll make our lives a lot easier.
All right, great. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Anytime you want to talk marijuana, cannabis, just let me know.
We will do that.
All right. Take care.
Thanks again to our guest, Director Brian Hanna from the Michigan Cannabis Regulatory Agency. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow, and the lovely Alethea Kasman.
Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr., mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian.
Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this podcast and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and send them a link. Learn more about Gongwer News Service at gongwer.com.
Remember, we are produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this show, you can support WDET by going to wdet.org/give. We'll talk to you next week.